Good afternoon to all our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM and everyone tuning in over the internet at cjtr.ca. Wherever you are, welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International volunteers, who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We are building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Thanks to Canadian band Mr. Something Something from Toronto and the Afrobeat poet Ikwunga for our theme song, You Are Beautiful. My name's Jim Hutchings, and this week I'm joined by my co-host Mona Hill. Welcome, everybody. Oh, and pardon me.
Hi.
I left out Kevin.
You did. Tell me about our guest.
We're welcoming the Saskatchewan Ombudsman, Kevin Fenwick, to discuss what the Office of the Ombudsman is all about and how it can make a difference in our lives. So welcome, Kevin.
Thanks, Jim. I'm very glad to be here.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for joining us. I'm sitting here with a copy of the Ombudsman Saskatchewan Annual Report 2010, and on the front cover it says, What We Are, Fair, Independent, Impartial. What we do, we negotiate, we investigate, and we mediate. And at the bottom it says, has the government been fair? And Kevin Fenwick has been working at this for almost 10 years now, haven't you?
Well, not quite. By the time I'm done, it'll have been 10 years. Yeah. I've actually been in the job I'm in now for a little bit more than 6 years.
Okay.
I was appointed as Saskatchewan's fifth ombudsman in October of 2004. We've had an ombudsman office in Saskatchewan actually since 1973, and the appointment is for 5 years, and you can be reappointed once, and so I've just nicely got settled into my second term, and when that term ends in about 3.5 years from now, there will be another ombudsman to take my spot.
Right, and I know Kevin, we have a connection because I did a practicum with the ombudsman's office a number of years ago, and the one thing I know about you, Kevin, is that you love your work.
I do.
I think it's wonderful to work for somebody who absolutely loves their work.
Yeah, I certainly do, and I'm very fortunate to work with a group of people who are, I think without exception, passionate about the work we do and believers in what we do and believe that we're doing good work and for good reasons. So it's a great group to work with.
Yeah, absolutely. A little bit of information from your bio is that you bring a proactive approach to fairness, and that's one of the things that that the Office of the Ombudsman does, is it works towards advocating for fairness.
We're not advocates necessarily for the people who come in the door, and what I mean by that is that if someone comes in and says, I think I've been treated unfairly by the government and I want you to do this, our office is not given the job of doing exactly what the person wants just because they ask us to do that. We're what's called an independent office of the Legislative Assembly, or I am an independent officer of the Legislative Assembly. And so our job is to make a determination about whether a citizen has been treated fairly, and if we think they have not been treated fairly by government or a government agency, we will advocate, and we will advocate strongly for fairness, for the fair result. That may be what the person hoped for or expected or asked for when they came to our office, or it may be something different. It may be that we find that the government actually did act fairly, or it may be that we find that they didn't. And often it's somewhere in between what the government did or thinks they did and what the individual has asked for when they came to us.
So what's the process? Let's pretend I think I have a problem with SAS Power. And their bill is way too high, and I feel I've not been listened to, and I discover that the Office of the Ombudsman might be somewhere I can go for help. What's the process that I would take?
Well, most people actually contact us by telephone. We have all kinds of avenues that are open for people to contact us. Telephone is the most common. You can write to us. You can come to our office. We have offices in both Regina and Saskatoon. Or for about a year and a half now, you can also file your complaint with us on a secure form that we have on our website. So we're accessible in a number of different ways. But let's assume that that you decided that you were going to give us a phone call and say, I have a problem with Sask Power. We know that we do have jurisdiction over issues involving Sask Power, so that first question for us would be an easy one. Is this a matter we can look at? Generally speaking, though, that is our first question. We're an office responsible for provincial government, ministries, agencies, boards, and commissions. So when you contact us, the first part of our process is to determine whether this is something we can help you with. And that is all government ministries and Crown corporations. So it is Sask Power and SaskTel and Sask Energy and SGI and the various other Crown corporations we have. It's boards and commissions like the Saskatchewan Water Authority or the Human Rights Commission or other agencies like that. It's also the regional health authorities because their boards are appointed by the provincial government. So we have a very, very broad jurisdiction. My jurisdiction as the Ombudsman for Saskatchewan is actually broader than some of my counterparts in other provinces because we have the Crown corporations in this province.
Right.
What we don't have jurisdiction over is things like the City of Regina or the City of Saskatoon. We don't have jurisdiction over those municipalities. We don't have jurisdiction over the federal government or the RCMP. We don't have jurisdiction over First Nations, Chief and Council, etc. So that's the first part of the process. Is this something we can help you with? If it's Sask Power, we can. The second part of the process then is we would have someone get some basic information from you first, and then we would refer you to one of our complaints analysts. They're our intake people. Those are the people who would sit down with you, listen to your story, figure out what it is that's wrong in your mind, and gather the basic information that we need to try and get a resolution. And then we would often actually try to give you some tools so that you can solve the problem on your own.
Well, that's being very proactive.
Well, and lots of times people come to us because they don't know what to do, mm-hmm. They don't know where to go, and we have contacts based on our experience in Sask Power. And so we might be able to say to you, Mona, we think that your best option right now is to talk to, you know, Bill Smith or Mary Jones or whoever it might be at Sask Power, because their job is to help you resolve these issues. If it doesn't work, we would say, come back to us. Mm-hmm. But try that first. Sometimes we'll do that. You may have already been to see Bill Smith or Mary Jones, and if that's the case, then we would take do an assessment of your file, and we would determine whether this is something that means we need to do a more thorough investigation. If we have to do that, then we would refer you to one of our assistant ombudsmen, and they're the ones that will do the more formal reviews of the file, to do sometimes formal investigations. We also do mediation where it's appropriate. We do facilitated discussions where it's appropriate. We sometimes do some shuttle diplomacy between you and the agency where that's appropriate.
How would you deem those different situations? How would you deem the appropriateness of them or not?
Good question. And there are there's no easy answer to that. It's a number of different factors. We would look at things that, like, how urgent is it that this needs to be solved? If it's a matter of you think your bill is too high, that's not as urgent as it would be if you came to us in January and said your power was about to be cut off.
Right.
So that's one of the factors that we would take into account. We'll try and determine whether your problem is because somebody did an addition error on the bill, or if it's because the relationship has broken down between you and the customer service agent. We try to look at three different things in our office. What's the meat and potatoes issue, the substantive decision we call it? What's the process issue? Was a fair process used by Sask Power in your case to make this decision? And what's the relationship issue? Is this a matter of the way you have been treated, for example, more than what the decision actually was? And so based on that, we'll figure out whether we think this is best for an investigation or some other form of appropriate case resolution.
Okay. That's pretty comprehensive, I think.
You can say long-winded. I've been accused of that.
Oh,
before.
No, that's great. You know, there's a lot of information about mediation, and there's a lot of talk lately. I mean, we know that the Human Rights Commission has sort of moved in a different direction to include more mediation, and this is something that the Office of the Ombudsman has done a lot of, and it sounds like this is something you're looking towards moving more into in the future, is mediation rather than... What would you replace that with?
Well, sometimes it's formal mediation. Very often what we're doing is we're working with people to help them polish the tools they already have in their toolbox, or maybe to give them some new tools or help them to use some tools they've never used before, either the citizen who comes to us with a complaint or the government official, so that they can work better together in the future to solve their own issues.
So it sounds to me like one of the things that you'd be good at is teaching communication skills.
Well, we often have to do that, sure. One of the interesting things about our work is, and one of the ironies is that the majority of people who come to us with complaints about a government agency have an ongoing relationship with the very agency they're complaining about. So while we can be helpful in stepping in to solve their problem for them, we're even more helpful if we can work with them to solve the problem and leave them with a better problem-solving process.
Right.
So that next time the same issue or a similar issue arises, they can sit down and work with the agency to figure out a solution that works for both sides.
Right. So the conflict resolution process is something you would be teaching.
It's part of it. Investigations are also a useful conflict resolution tool.
True.
But they're one tool. There are lots of others.
What others are there?
Well, things like mediation and facilitated communication and coaching and sitting down and having a good old conversation. Those are all, you know, good conflict resolution tools.
And I know that the time that I spent in your office, there was a process that was beginning or sort of in the process of going out to the people rather than expecting everyone to come to your office. I know there was an outreach. There was conversation about outreach into the rural areas. And how has that gone?
Well, we've always done a lot of public awareness, a lot of presentations to make people aware of us. We're still championing the idea that we want to do what we call mobile intake, where we get out into the communities and potentially have a traveling office. We haven't progressed as far along that road as maybe some of us would have liked, but it's still on our agenda. As a matter of fact, it's a priority for us for this year. There are lots of options for that, but one of the things we are looking at is what we are calling mobile intake, both in the southern part of the province and in northern Saskatchewan, where it might be even more important, where we can come to you rather than you come to us.
Right. And the other thing that I remember working on was the aspect of cultural values. You mentioned at one point that a lot of the people that you work with are First Nation, and the differences between cultural values, perhaps understanding of processes. If you're not an urban person who's had a lot of contact with these agencies and that sort of thing. So, how have you worked on that?
Well, a number of things. We certainly try to have a representative workforce within our office, so that we want our office staff to be reflective of the people that we represent, both in terms of what is the population of Saskatchewan and also what's the population of our clientele. And it's very diverse. It is partly based on race and ethnicity and culture, because we have a significant number of people come to us who are First Nations or Métis, who have the Aboriginal background. We have now seen an increase in the number of new Canadians who are coming to us as well. We also have a significant number of people who come to us who have mental health issues. And that's another part of the diverse population that that we try and serve. So what we try and do is make sure that all of our staff are equipped with a base level of knowledge for all of those kinds of diversities. We also try and hire so that there is diversity within our office as well. We try to provide as much professional development and professional education for our staff as we can. The other thing we do is we try and make the written materials that we present from our office easily readable and easily understandable. We will make other languages available. If that means bringing an interpreter in, we'll do that if it's appropriate to do so, etc. So we try to be culturally sensitive.
That's wonderful. Let's go back now and start talking maybe a little bit about the history of the Ombudsman. Where did this concept originate?
Well, it's actually an interesting time to be talking about it because we have recently celebrated the 200th anniversary of the establishment of the Western world's first ombudsman. It was in 1809 in Sweden that the ombudsman concept was first enshrined in one country's constitution. It actually goes back a little bit before that. The king of Sweden in the 18th century was away from Sweden, in Russia for about 7 years fighting a war, back in the days when kings actually went off to fight their own wars. And the king of Sweden decided during that seven-year period that he needed to have someone left behind in Sweden to keep an eye on the civil service for him. So he created what was the first ombudsman, and it was called the king's special representative. And that person's job was to make sure that the public service, the civil servants, treated the citizens of Sweden fairly. Now, that is generally looked at as the start of the ombudsman concept, although historians will tell us that that first king's special representative was probably a bit more concerned with looking after the king's interests than he really was the citizens' interests. But the concept was a good one, and it caught on. And in 1809, the Swedish Parliament enshrined the concept of an ombudsman, which in Swedish means citizens' representative, into their constitution.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. And I'd like to reflect on what you just said about maybe, this first ombudsman maybe being more concerned about the interests of the king. Now, since the Office of the Ombudsman is funded by the provincial government, how do you get around doing investigations and maybe offering encouragement to government officials to maybe change what they're doing, the way they're doing it, in order to serve the public better without concern for that funding? How does that happen?
It's a good question. I'm going to change your question just slightly, because there was one bit of information that you said in there, Mona, that wasn't quite correct.
Okay.
We're not actually funded by the government.
So where do you get
We're
your money?
We're funded by the Legislative Assembly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a slight difference, but it's a very important difference.
Okay.
In our democratic model, we have three different branches of government, is what it's called. There's the legislative branch, which is the Legislative Assembly, and that's both the government of the day and the opposition and the people that work for the Legislative Assembly. We have the executive government, which is what we generally think of as the ministries and the corporations, crown corporations,
right,
and all those things. And we also have the judicial branch. My office is not part of the executive branch of government. We're part of the legislative branch. So I am not responsible to any of those ministers whose departments we are critiquing. I don't get funded by them. I don't have to report to any of them. My bosses are the members of the Legislative Assembly, both government and opposition. And so that means I am, and my office is, independent from the government of the day. There are actually seven now independent officers in Saskatchewan, the ombudsman being one of them. The others are the provincial auditor, the chief electoral officer, the Freedom of Information and Privacy Commissioner, the children's advocate, the Conflict of Interest Commissioner, and most recently, the Public Interest Disclosure Commissioner. That's a new office that's just been created in the last assembly. And what we all share is that we report to the Legislative Assembly and not the government of the day. So if I come out with something that is critical of the Ministry of Social Services, for example, I don't have to worry that the Minister of Social Services might take offense and cut off my funding, because
right,
it's not that minister's job.
I'm glad we discussed that, because I think that there might be a misconception out there that this could be a problem, and why would they trust the ombudsman mm-hmm. when they work for the government? So that's mm-hmm. kind of why I wanted mm-hmm. to ask that question.
Now, having said that, we're a province of 1 million people where everybody knows everybody, and mm-hmm. And there's a danger in that because you know the people that you're dealing with in the ministries, you might get too close to them. We try and guard against that. And instead, I think that it is really an advantage that we're a province of a million people and that we do have those connections, because what it means is that very often we don't have to do a formal investigation. We can make a few phone calls and we can say, look, Minister so-and-so or Deputy Minister so-and-so, we've looked at this situation and it just doesn't seem to make sense to us, so could you fix it? And let me give you an example of that. A couple of years ago, the Ministry of Social Services implemented a policy of direct deposits for social assistance recipients. And there's all kinds of good reasons for that. If you do a direct deposit model, it saves the province money because they don't have to issue checks all the time. It means that social assistance recipients are interacting with the banking system and gaining some skills. It means that a couple of times a month they're not walking out of the corner grocery store with, you know, $50 bills falling out of their pockets, etc. So there's all kinds of good reasons for it. But one size doesn't fit all.
That's true.
And what we found is that in the first 10 days or so after that policy was implemented, we had a large number of complaints to our office from one particular northern community where people were being told by their social workers that they were going to be cut off social assistance because they didn't have a bank account and therefore couldn't have direct deposit.
I am very familiar with that. Yes.
So that was a big mistake, we think, for the ministry not to have taken those considerations into account. But the good news was, because we are a small province and people know people, I was able to phone the deputy minister and say, we have an issue here, could we talk about it? We sat down, we had a conversation, I explained the situation, the deputy minister said that was not our intent, and the matter got fixed almost immediately. So credit to the ministry for being able to respond very quickly to an issue.
That's wonderful. I'm looking at some information that was sent to me, and one of the things you know, you say credit to the agency. I think there's some credits in here to specific government workers, aren't there?
Mm-hmm.
So working in government.
It's a practice that actually my predecessor, I think, introduced into the office before I was appointed, and they used to call them kudos. Now we call them accolades, and people need to recognize that even though that we sometimes receive complaints about government ministries, there are many times when we will see public servants go and be out above and beyond the call of duty and deliver exceptional service to resolve problems. And so while we criticize them sometimes, we also like to give credit when credit is due. And so we will, in our annual report every year, give some accolades to some of those
right.
members.
Yeah, I think that's a wonderful idea. Oftentimes people who work for the government maybe don't have a history of having how should I put this very delicately, a good reputation with the public. So I think it's always good to know that there are people who do a good job and who are concerned about doing a good job. We've got a few minutes left until we go to the break, and when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more maybe about the Children's Advocate. And we're going to do a follow-up show on this, by the way. We're doing a series with the Ombudsman in a couple of weeks. He'll come back, and we'll talk about what you're doing in the schools, right? And maybe we'll talk a little bit more about the Children's Advocate then. But right now, I think, yes, I found the accolades page, and I think this is wonderful. There is one here for Jerry Panay, the kitchen supervisor at the Correctional Center in Regina. In addition to ordering soy milk for a lactose intolerant inmate who could not eat the regular breakfast provided, you also went out and picked up a small supply so the inmate would not have to wait on the order. So as something as small as that is important to the Office of the Ombudsman, as it is important to the person involved in the first place.
Absolutely. Especially for those, you know, those people whose interactions with government are what they literally live on from day to day. If you're a social services recipient or an inmate at a correctional center or a workers' compensation board beneficiary, etc. Every one of those little interactions is a big interaction for you.
Absolutely. Here's another one that I remember reading about a while back, that the Marnie Williams, the senior program consultant of Child Care Subsidy Ministry of Social Services, I thank you for quickly assessing the situation of a dad with a disability with joint custody who was having trouble getting a school allowance for his children. You were aware of a difference of interpretation of the rules in your region and noted that a policy review was underway to correct the situation.
Mona, I think the vast majority of public servants are trying to do their very best and are really there following what I always call the ethic of public service. They are there to serve the public. Sometimes what they're confronted with is policies that have good intentions but don't fit the individual circumstances of that case. So what we encourage is for those frontline workers to have some discretion to be able to make decisions that fit the needs of the individual case. And so a lot of those accolades are for people who've done that, who've stepped up to the plate and found ways to be creative sometimes to do the right thing.
Right. What have we got left for the... We got 1 minute left? Okay. Okay, well, we will be back after the break. We're talking with Kevin Fenwick. He's the Provincial Ombudsman for Saskatchewan. We're just sort of reviewing a history of what the Ombudsman Office is about, what they do, what they are, and we have the annual report. We're discussing that, and we'll come back for more in a few minutes.
Leaning up and looking large in a swank Delancey bar, I was Aqua Vitae, and who loves you, baby? I was 3 fingers tall and a mauve whiskey jigger, knowing just how far that jive was gonna take me. Now, I don't say that I got the right, I'm just telling what it's like. My friends say, what you got to go shout about? You're unsound and senseless, unruly and reckless, and calling some heavy cat out. What you doing going and calling some heavy cat out? But I was gassed up and geared up, and brother, don't you know it, I was greased up and runway ready. I was 2 pair better than that cat's high card bluff till I ran 2 yards short in the city. I ran 2 yards short in the city.
Meet me on the east side, baby. Meet me on the east side of town. I'm living on the outside, baby. Checking in to see what's going down. I'm checking in to see what's going down.
That's right. She drove a mean Mercedes, hard and death card colored. She pushed them white walls right up against the curb. I said, that ain't no way to go and treat that good rich rubber. She says, you better cart your carriage right out of here. 'Cause she got a kid leather gorilla man, and from what I understand, he's first in line every time and everywhere that he goes. With a wide stride cock walk like he owns the whole sidewalk. A brass cheek and a face that nobody knows. Tell you, that cat's got a face that nobody knows. Consequently, she had nerve in her curves. But that ain't the worst. She could sex you, but she sure weren't pretty. She was tore up from the floor up with a fisheye grin. And I landed 2 yards short in the city. You know, I landed 2 yards short in the city. Mm-hmm. Meet me on the east side, baby. Meet me on the east side of town. I'm living on the outside, baby. Checking in to see what's going down. That's right, I'm checking in to see what's going down.
Bow, 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 bow
And the subliminal criminal at the tour transit terminal robs you blind when you're just standing there talking. With no scratch till Tuesday and no line of credit, you'll be lucky if you leave and you're still walking. Cause with everyone sweating, working hard at not working, sweet deals and big wheels and angles every day, I figure one score more and there'll be bodies on the floor. So don't you give truck to what them suckers gotta say. No, don't you give truck to what suckers say. Cause I had an outstanding plan to take on the man. I had green on the hip and cash in the kitty. I was 2 Lincolns long at the Chase Manhattan, but I landed 2 yards short in the city. Yeah, I landed 2 yards short in the city. Meet me on the east side, baby.
And that's Big Rude Jake, and he's a guy that I heard with his band at the Reservoir Lounge in Toronto a couple of weekends ago, and really entertaining guy, and I thought I should play him today. So, we're back.
Welcome back, everyone.
Oh, wait, I haven't turned your mic on yet.
Oh.
There, now you're back.
Oh, great. Welcome back, everyone, to Human Rights Radio on CJTR. This is Mona Hill, and I'm here with my co-host, Jim Hutchings. And we are here with the Ombudsman of Saskatchewan, Kevin Fenwick. We have been talking about what the Ombudsman does, what they don't do, how they negotiate, investigate, and mediate. And Kevin's been telling some great stories. So we will continue. Best practices. Let's talk about that.
That's part of the evolution of what's happening in the ombudsman world, Mona. There was a time when the ombudsman work was to basically decide whether government had met a certain basic minimal standard of fairness. So if you came to us with your complaint about SaskPower, using the example that you had before, we would look to see whether SaskPower had been fair to you, whether they'd achieved a basic level of fairness. But the ombudsman world is changing, and so now we'll still do that, but in addition to that, we will look at whether SaskPower could have done better. So we've called it raising the bar. It's no longer good enough to say that, yeah, okay, you did all right, you didn't do anything wrong. Instead, what we use is a best practices model. So we will say now to the government agency, you could have done better. And that's what best practices models are all about.
Do they have to take your suggestions, or is that all they are, is suggestions? Do they have to do what they're told, so to speak, when you come up with, you've done an okay job here, or maybe you haven't really done a good job here, and we are recommending this might enable you to do a better job in the future. Do they have to take those suggestions?
I was kind of wondering that myself, like, what kind of teeth do you have?
We have two things. We have very strong powers of investigation. We counter that, though, with the idea that we do live in a democracy and the ultimate decisions rest with the people who are the elected officials, and I can't overrule the elected officials or their designates. So, although I have a strong power to investigate, I only have the power to recommend. Okay. It's more than a suggestion, but it's not an order. Having said that, we work very hard at making sure that the recommendations we do make are well-reasoned, they're based on good, solid research and investigations, and that they make sense and they're doable. So that when we make a recommendation, in almost all cases, the government does follow those recommendations. It's a rare occasion when they don't, and of course, I think they should follow all of them, because that's what we do. There are occasions when they don't, but most of the time they do.
And that takes me back to the time I was in the office when there was a new construction on our provincial jail. Because that came out of a recommendation or a number of recommendations, actually a whole report on the jail by the Office of the Ombudsman.
And that's a good example of a couple of things. One is that, yes, we do make recommendations sometimes that are very wide-reaching. And my predecessor had been responsible for a report that was released in 2002 called Locked Out, which was an examination of what was going on in the correction system in Saskatchewan. And one of the recommendations, among many in that report, was the demolition of the old section of the Regina Jail that was built in 1913, and its replacement was something more modern. And it took a while for that to happen, but when the announcement was made that the 1913 section of the jail would be demolished, many people deserve credit for that, but the minister who made the announcement gave credit to the Ombudsman's office as one of the factors that led to that. So that's an example of where we can have some broad effect.
So when you're talking about best practices and you're making recommendations, how far in depth do you actually get? Do you sort of just address specific areas of change? Or broad sweeping, or I guess it depends on the problem, does it?
Yes, is the answer. In other words, we do both. Certainly we do both. There are situations where we will make very specific recommendations to fix a problem for one individual, but we are always looking for the issues that are beneath the tip of that proverbial iceberg. One of my beliefs is that if we have 10 people come to our office this year with complaints about the same issue that we received 10 complaints about last year, then we haven't done our job. So we try to look at what is beneath the presenting problem to the underlying issues. And so we would hope that while we might make a recommendation to solve your problem, that the implications of that recommendation would mean that we're not likely to get the same problem back again in the future. So there are broad recommendations as well.
Do you find that the majority of problems are about process, or are there other issues that need to be addressed at times? Maybe even, I'm thinking of maybe one particular employee who may have an attitude problem, or maybe hasn't had the right training and is having a difficult time connecting with people who they're supposed to be serving. Are there other issues besides process that come up quite often, or is it mostly about process?
No, actually, the way that people present the problems to us originally is usually about the decision itself, not so much about the process. People will come to us and say, SGI didn't pay me enough for the damage to my vehicle, or they didn't use a fair process when they decided what they were going to pay me, or I was treated rudely while they were talking to me. So it's three sides of a triangle that we talk about. It's what was decided, that's one side, how it was decided, that's the second side, and how I was treated or how I felt while the decision was being made, that's the third side. And usually when people come to us, they're talking about the decision itself. When we engage them in conversation, that's when we often find that what really concerns them is the process or the way that they were treated.
That's interesting, because when you're thinking of bureaucracy, which I think we would sort of envision this as a part of a bureaucracy, it's not very often that people's feelings are taken into account.
Government is getting better for that. They really are. I think that's also because expectations of government have changed. 50 years ago, if you stopped someone on the street out here on 8th Avenue and said to them, "What are your expectations of government?" I think the answer was fairly straightforward. I think government should make good decisions. That's a substantive kind of thing. What was the decision itself? But if you stopped some people today and asked that same question, and you might have to probe a little bit, but I think their answer today is much more complicated. Citizens today still expect that government will make good decisions, but we also expect today that the process that is used to make those decisions is open, transparent, and inclusive. In other words, I'm involved in decisions that affect me. And thirdly, the expectation now is that customer service is important, that the way we are treated is just as important as the decision. And over the course of the last 10 or 15 years, in my experience in Saskatchewan, I have heard government agencies more and more talking about the importance of government services. Customer service.
Exactly. Yes.
So we are seeing that trend, and I don't know whether it's a reaction to the changing expectations or whether it would have happened on its own, mm-hmm. but it's happening nonetheless.
I can't see anything wrong with that at all.
I think it's a great thing. Yeah.
It
makes it harder, though, for government workers because the expectations of them are higher.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But it's not that they can't acquire those skills.
Sure.
They're great skills to have,
sure,
I think. Yeah.
Sure. And it also makes a difference, I think, in the way that government recruits new employees.
You
because
bet.
Government now, when it's recruiting, is probably looking for a different skill set.
Yeah, you bet. Maybe a more expanded skill set.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Systemic investigations, when we talked about, you know, the report on the jail, the locked out report, and I would imagine that that report was a systemic report that resulted from a number of complaints, like maybe the same complaints over and over again. Do you want to talk about systemic investigations and how they get started? And
what we try and do is that every time a complaint comes into our office, even if it's the first time we've seen that complaint, we look at what the underlying issues are. But especially in cases where we see a number of similar complaints, we start to look for patterns and reasons why we're seeing so many of these complaints of a similar nature. And so we keep track of those, and two or three, or sometimes we're hoping in the future, four times a year, we will do systemic reviews where we'll do a much broader investigation that is much more comprehensive and looks at the underlying issues behind what's going on. So let me give you an example. A few years ago, we were receiving a significant number of complaints every year about the length of time that it was taking for administrative tribunals to make decisions. We have about 50 or 60 what are called administrative tribunals in the province. These are agencies that make decisions that affect you and I every day. The Highway Traffic Board, the Human Rights Tribunal, the Milk Control Board, the list goes on and on and on. And what we were finding was is that a number of them were taking a long time to hand down their decision after they had a hearing. So we started to look at that, and we picked six of these agencies to do an in-depth look at what their processes were and why it was taking so long to make those decisions. And when we did that in-depth review, we ended up tabling a report in the Legislative Assembly in December of 2007 called Hearing Back, a look at the timeliness of decision-making in administrative tribunals. And we made a total of 27 recommendations in that report for improving the level of service to the citizens of Saskatchewan from those various administrative tribunals. And although we only looked at six of them, the recommendations we made would apply to all of the tribunals.
Right. So that could be extrapolated and used elsewhere.
Absolutely. And in fact, not just within Saskatchewan, that report has been quoted in British administrative law journals. It has been relied on by administrative tribunals and agencies across Canada and has been regarded as the first in-depth look from a best practices perspective at a number of those processes.
Wow, groundbreaking.
Yeah. Yes, it really
That's
was.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, so those are the kinds of things that we do in systemics. Mm-hmm. Right now we're just concluding a report where we've been looking at delays in therapies in breast cancer treatment in Saskatchewan. And we've been working with the cancer agency to look at the processes that they use. And I'm very pleased to say that a number of changes have been implemented while we've been doing that report, and that report will be completed in the near future. We're just fine-tuning it right now with the cancer agency. And I want to make that point. When we do these systemic reviews, we will work with the agency as we're doing that, because while we think they can learn from us, we also need their cooperation, and we need to learn from them while we're doing the report.
Right. In the annual report, you have statistics, and those I think it's a good segue to talk about some of those statistics about complaints received and what ministries were complained about, and then you've got a lot of topic or headings here, like the initial support, whether there was referral assistance, situation, had it improved or not, was there a resolution, was there not, and were there recommendations made, were the complaints discontinued. And this basically covers pretty well every ministry in the province. Looking through here, yeah, pretty well every single one. And boards such as Highway Traffic Board, Labor Relations Board, Saskatchewan Arts Board even. There was a complaint received about the Saskatchewan Arts Board. The Western Development Museum didn't have any this year. Last year, rather, yay. it's just mind-boggling. Going through this report, is there anything in particular that would stand out for you from last year?
Well, we often get asked, so who are people complaining about the most? And there are sort of three levels in terms of just the raw numbers. There are two agencies that year after year will generate the largest number of complaints, and that's the Ministry of Social Services and the Ministry of Corrections, Public Safety and Policing. And that's the same for every ombudsman across Canada. So that's our big two, and that's sort of the first level. And for the last several years, those two ministries will each generate for us between 500 and 800 complaints a year each. Mm-hmm. That's probably 60% of our total is just from those two agencies. Then there's a bit of a drop-off to the next group, and the next group are roughly in the 100 to 200 complaints a year range, and that consists of complaints about health issues, workers' comp, and the four major crowns, SGI, SAS Power, SAS Tel, and SAS Energy. So that's more or less 100 to 200 each. And then from there on, there's probably not a single agency in government that hasn't had a complaint made about them to us at some point or another. So, yeah, the Arts Board occasionally. Mm-hmm. About every 3 or 4 years, we might get one about the Film and Video Classification Board. So, you know, eventually, if someone is interacting with a government agency, somebody's not going to be satisfied, and they might come to us. So there's actually quite a range, but no one is immune. And then the other statistics you're talking about in terms of situation improved or resolved, etc. Mm-hmm. We work very hard in our office to make sure that we are effective, and we want to know that we're having an impact. So when we conclude a file, we keep track of what happened with it. Did we have to make a recommendation? And if we did, was it accepted? Or was the situation resolved along the way? At the end of the day, was the citizen in a better position when they left our office than they were when they came? And that might mean it was resolved, or it might mean the situation was improved. So we track all of that information in the hope that it will help us to do a better job at what we do.
Okay. This is just great. If someone's interested in getting a copy of the annual report for the Ombudsman Saskatchewan, how do they go about and get it?
I'm sure we still have some copies around our office. They could call and do mm-hmm. that. But the easiest is actually go to our website. You can go to our website, and if people don't want to remember the actual website address, you can Google Ombudsman Saskatchewan right. and find it that way, or www.ombudsman.sk.ca. And that annual report is available on the website, as well as a lot of other materials that we use. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we're proud of right now, actually, is that we've worked very hard to make our information available for a wide cross-section of people in the province, including students and teachers. So there's a section on the website specifically designed for students and teachers, and there are links within our materials to parts of the high school curriculum in the Law 30 class or in Social Studies Grade 10, where teachers can actually take information from our website, and it's virtually ready to deliver to the classes. And so that information is on the website, as well as the annual reports. And all of those systemic reviews that I talked about, they're there as well.
And do you find that it's used quite often, or would you know about that?
We get a lot of hits, on the
okay.
website every year. Yeah.
I think that's a wonderful thing that they're using this information to teach young people about human rights.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah.
How much time do we have left, Jim?
Oh, we still have about 6 minutes left.
Okay, and you have some announcements.
I have a couple
make,
of announcements.
You?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I think probably, Kevin, I'm gonna pass it over to you for the last few minutes and just give you carte blanche. How do you want to end this? I mean, I did mention that we're gonna do a follow up and we're gonna talk about some other issues and what you're doing in the schools, and that was sort of a nice ending too. Talking about the use of the information by teachers and professors at the university. But
you know,
what would you like to sort of impart upon the public about the importance of your work and the importance of the Ombudsman Office?
We started with a little bit of history. Maybe I'll conclude with a little bit of history as a way to explain what it is that we do. There used to be in Britain two parallel court systems, and much of our law in Canada comes from a British model. And 300 or 400 years ago in Britain, there were actually two parallel court systems. There were the courts of law, and those are the ones we're still familiar with today, where you can sue somebody or there are criminal matters involved, etc. But there were also what were called the courts of equity. And the courts of equity in Britain were presided over by the Chancellor, and that was the king's right-hand man, and of course at that time it was always a man. And the Chancellor presided over these courts of equity, and in the right circumstances, where it was appropriate to do so, where justice demanded it, the Chancellor could step in and say to the courts, well, your decision may be right, may be correct, but it's not fair. And the chancellor could actually overrule the courts of law. Over the years, most of what happened in the courts of equity has sort of been rolled into the courts of law. So we really have one court system now that is comprised of the legal court process. I think there's still a role for somebody to do what the chancellor used to do. And that's part of what the ombudsman does. So part of my job is to step in and examine a situation and where it's appropriate to do so, to say to the government, well, that may be correct, but it just ain't right. The policy that you have may be a good policy, but it doesn't fit these individual circumstances. There needs to be some discretion to do the right thing. We have become a very rights-based society, and policies are good things. I don't mean to say that they're not. They help government be efficient, etc. But in too much of a rights-based society, we sometimes think that our goal is to make sure the policies are followed, and that's not right. The policies are there to help us achieve the program goals. So sometimes our role is to say to the government agencies, step back, see what it is you're trying to accomplish, make a decision that should advance the program goals, even if that means you have to be creative with what the policy says. And that's I think, a big part of the role of the ombudsman. That may be correct, but it just ain't right.
Okay. And as, you know, when we think about the term fairness, it can be a very subjective term. And it sounds like the ombudsman has maybe a pretty good handle on decisions about what's fair and what's equitable. And so I think we appreciate that very much.
Thank you.
Jim, how much time do you have? You got enough time for your announcements?
I do.
Okay. Well, I'm going to wrap up and thank Kevin Fenwick from the Office of the Ombudsman for joining us today. And we will be back on the 24th with Kevin to talk about what they're doing with the schools. So thank you so much for your time, Kevin. It's been great having you.
Great to be here. Thanks very much.
Okay. Wrap it up, Jim.
Okay. The first thing that I wanted to point out is the annual music garage sale that's going to happen tomorrow here at the good old GM building on the main floor. It's our annual music garage sale. It's a major fundraiser for Regina Community Radio. And the address here, if you're not familiar with it, is 1102 8th Avenue. It's the old General Motors building where they used to build trucks and cars and stuff here back in the 20s. And that's tomorrow from 9 to 5 p.m. So please come down, and you never know what kind of treasures you're going to find here. If you like vinyl, or if you're looking for stereo equipment or CDs, you just don't know.
It's all piled up outside of the studio here. There's all kinds of equipment.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You get a chance to meet Jim. He's going to be working tomorrow.
Yeah, I'll be working tomorrow, and there'll be other programmers that you can come
I'll
down and
meet. I'll
be
here from 8 to 10 in the morning if you want to come and ask for Mona and come and tell me how much you love the show. I love that.
And one other thing we have to talk about is the CJTR Look and Listen Lottery, in which you could win a complete audio-video makeover for your home with a grand prize of a 58-inch Panasonic 3D plasma TV with a home theater receiver, 3D Blu-ray player, complete surround sound speaker package, theater seating for three, stands for the TV and speakers, and installation in your home for a retail value of $10,040. Wow. That's the grand prize. Second prize is a 50-inch Panasonic plasma TV, retail value of $1,100. And third prize is a Monster Beats by Dr. Dre iPod Dock Boombox, retail value of $550. Now, the draw date is drawing nigh. It's Friday, June 17th at 5 p.m. Tickets are just $20 each. Only 1,000 tickets will be sold, so there aren't too many left. You better get one really soon. For tickets and more information, you can go to our website at www.cjtr.ca. You can call the station during business hours at 525-7274, or you can email us at lookandlistenlottery@cjtr.ca. Prizes are furnished by Radio Center Consumer Electronics. This is a really good way for you to support Regina Community Radio. So get your tickets now for the Look and Listen Lottery. Hey, and I have time to say goodbye. And so we're going to close this week's Human Rights Radio on CJTR Community Radio. We hope you've enjoyed listening to and have learned something new about human rights for all people. Peter Benenson, the founder of Amnesty International, often said, "It's better to light a candle of hope than to curse the darkness."